Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Righteous Toastbreak of Nigeria Radio, and I hope you've been enjoying all the beautiful programming we've been giving you this beautiful Sunday in Adeak Nation, Nigeria. Earlier on, it was Real Talk with Lola, and of course, time again for us to do the Doctor's Round with Dr. A.G. Ahmed. All right, Dr. A.G. is there in Ottawa, in Canada. Dr. A.G., how are you doing today?
Very well, Toye. Good afternoon. How are you?
Yeah, good evening.
Oh, good evening to you. Good evening to Nigeria.
Yes.
Good evening all over the world. Good day all over the world. It is your program again, Doctor's Round. And with me again today, we're having Dr. Anyonride, our guest last week that did justice to depression and anxiety. Dr. Anyonride, welcome.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Certainly, we've had a lot of feedback since we last had, since last week over the excellent job that you did. Thank you very much for sharing your expertise with listeners. As always, this is Doctor's Round on Spirit of Nigerian Radio. It is a program that is in partnership. I've been told never to say co-sponsored because I understand it has some financial implication right to it. You warned me, and I listen. I'm a good student. The guy said, don't say sponsor. Then we think that this is a program that is making a lot of money. But I understand that this is more of a program of service to the community. So in partnership with Turn Nigeria and Spirit of Nigeria, in the second hour, we're going to be having listeners calling in. On today's program, we're going to be talking about students' mental health. One thing that really put Dr. Anyonride in this spot is his experience with education, medical education in particular, and being the chair of the Commission on Black Students Commission. At Queen's University. That puts him in the right position to talk about this. He's a psychiatrist, he's a teacher, and he has practiced in at least three continents. So this is a well-rounded individual. So he's going to do justice to this program. My name is A.G. Ahmed. I'm the host of Doctor's Round. Dr. Anyonride, welcome again.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Maybe we should start with this story. A 21-year-old student has been feeling under extreme pressure in the university. Grades have been inconsistent, and there have been three receipts or failures in three courses. His sleep has been erratic. There has been increasing level of anxiety with bodily sensation. Mom and dad are worried about him. Friends are worried about the presentation. Doc, what's going on?
Well, thank you so much. This is quite a common presentation, and many of us who work in educational institutions or have friends who've had children go through medical institutions, or even think back to our days when we're in college or in educational institutions, may have come across situations like this. What's going on? It could be one of several things. It could be stress, and we could build on what stress may mean here. There are many challenges students go through when studying, particularly when they're studying away from home, and we'll elaborate on that in the discussion. It could be to do with a burden of expectation. And since this is a Nigerian radio station and also tending to issues in diaspora, the burden of expectation can be immense. There's a good old phrase, Naija no dey last. And Naija no dey last has an expectation of its own. So here you are, you're in university or in college, you end up maybe getting 88%. And there's an expectation that's, hold on, why didn't you get 90 plus? There may be an expectation that people want to know what your level was in class. Were you second? First, how come you were number 32 in a class of 40 students? Many people leaving home may be going through competition, raw competition for the first time. So you've left your high school or your college and you were the local champion. I mean, you were good. You were first all the time. They're in a setting whereby you're putting in your all and you're still middle of the class or the bottom of the class. Sometimes, and we see this quite often, there are people studying courses they're not even interested in. Now, you and I know our culture has some expectations, which, I mean, I disagree with, but, you know, it's, okay, are you studying medicine? No. Okay, you want to be an accountant? No. A lawyer? No. Okay, an architect? No. Engineer? No. Then what do you want to do? Performing arts, mom. Performing arts, called performing arts, ne. You know, okay, maybe you do that with your first degree, but you still come back and study law or another program. So there is that burden of expectation. And we come across people who are doing courses they don't even have any interest in. Being away from home or being on campus also is a test of time management. And if any of you was a good student like I was, university...
I'm going to call Australia now to ask somebody.
Oh, please. You know, having that liberty with clubs, parties, a period of adolescence and adventure and experiment can be really testing on time management. A person may be going through a whole range of relationships, and some people are falling in love for the first time. Some people are beginning to start sexual intimacy. And if we think of our international students, which is really worthy of note, adjustment. It's not easy being very far away from home. Now, you're at home in mom and dad's lovely place, you know, pounded yam is there, or ogbono soup is there. And then you're ending up in some university in a faraway land at minus 20 degrees. You've got crisps and a can of Coke for lunch, and you're homesick. So these can be quite tricky. From the scenario given, this person is struggling to sleep, and right. Many things can affect sleep. I mean, every single one of us would have had a moment in our lives that we didn't sleep well. Is it anxiety? And if you try to go to bed with lots of worries and anxiety, it's not easy to fall asleep. Is the person depressed? We talked about anxiety and depression last week. Is this clinical depression? One thing we often don't think about, but we must, is the use of stimulants.
Right.
Students sometimes try to cram 25 hours into a 24-hour day. So, you know, they're taking coffee, chewing cola nuts, using stimulant medication, some use for ADHD, just to try and perform. You know, you're trying to flog the performance of a Ferrari out of your beat-up Datsun brain. To just get the extra grades. And that can be really, really tricky. Or, right. Or the use of drugs. A cute anecdote, I remember a colleague who tried chewing cola nuts in London, England, all through just before exams. He sat in the exams, a white colleague, he sat in the exams just staring. He said his brain was just going as if there was static electricity. And he just didn't feel present. So there could be also drug use with this student. Is the person experimenting or using cannabis, you know, benzodiazepines, coke? And there are lots of drugs there. There's a real huge drug culture within campuses and universities. And a final observation, which may affect the sleep, that we often don't think about is if you're studying in a different time zone. So mum and dad or family or loved ones may be in a time zone 8 hours difference, 6 hours difference. So you're up at night speaking with them in another time zone, yet you're doing your day's work and study as well. So a lot happens in university life. And for many of us listening, been there, done it, I've got T-shirts with holes in them.
Interesting. So this particular scenario is something that plays itself out in a large number of students. It can be part of adjustment, and it that may be transient, and it may be part of habit to cope with the adjustment, or it may be a manifestation of a process illness, as my colleagues would say, anxiety, depression, or even other forms of mental disorder, looking at the age of the individual.
Yes.
So in your experience, and you've given a very a broad range of explanation, how common is this generally? Is it really common?
It's a lot commoner than people think. And campus or college mental health services or student health services deal with situations like this every single day. Some of the people may be quite severely depressed. Some students are actually suicidal. And we know in the UK, the US, Canada, there's an excess of suicides among students. Students who are going through immense distress with the expectations, and they're found dead in their rooms. So it's commoner than people think. Many parents feel quite assured that they've spent money on giving their child the best education money can afford. But money doesn't buy the sort of emotional peace of mind that the student may need, particularly when they're very, very far away from home. And it can be incredibly lonely. So it's commoner than people think. Many students conceal their difficulties. So, you know, I'll use my name. Deji, so how's the university going? It's going great, Mum. And how are your grades? They're fantastic. Thank you. And then Mum says, thank God, you're blessed. It's well in Jesus' name. And I know, goodness, I've just flunked my three exams. What on earth am I going to say? Right. So it's, and then you're being reminded by dad, son, you know you can't fail. You know you can't fail. I sold that house in Lekki because of you. It's because of you that I've not bought a new car. So I'm spending all my money to give you a good education. And these are challenges that also bring pressures, but they're a lot commoner than people think.
So what can the student do about this? When you discover this sort of constellation of symptoms, what to do?
Well, one thing you don't want to do is keep it to yourself. And we see over and over and over students keeping the distress to themselves. Now, it can be quite embarrassing. It can be quite awkward. You may not want to talk about it. But it's good to find someone you can confide in. It could be a roommate. May not be a roommate. Maybe someone you know from a course or one of your tutors, lecturers, but please confide in someone. You may not want to tell Mum or Dad, but you may really, really, really feel close to Auntie Dolapo. And you feel, okay, I can tell Auntie Dolapo, but I can't tell Mum and Dad, and so on.
Does that not make me weak if I were discussing all this stress with Auntie Dolapo? I just came, I was a star student. Does that not make me weak?
No, it's certainly not weakness. I would say it's strong and it's strength. And I'm going to link that to also male students. There's something about the way we raise our boys and girls that's different, that makes the communication of distress really different. So if we have twins, imaginary twins, Shade and Shola, you know, Shola goes through emotional distress as a child. Oh, come to dad, get a hug, my darling, it'll be okay. You'll be okay, darling. And Shade learns to communicate her emotions comfortably. And as she grows older, she's comfortable also sharing that distress. Now, Shola also goes through emotional distress. Look, my friend, you're a man. Why are you crying as if you're a wimp? And Shola starts learning or gets the sign of weakness. Mm-hmm. But it's actually strength to be able to share the distress. So within campuses, there are campus health services, there are student peer support groups that support each other. There's campus mental health services as well. And you can also share with your tutor. Now, an important thing many people should know is universities want you to graduate. No university wants 10% of their students graduating and 90% not. They want you to do well. And if you're going through difficulties that have mitigating factors, it could be the death of a loved one, the death of a parent or a sibling or other challenges, don't keep it to yourself, because universities and colleges can adapt and adjust for your grades when they know. If they don't know, they can't respond. So whatever you do, don't keep it to yourself.
What should parents, what should mom and dad do about this? They've just heard that with all this investment, things are going this way. What should they do?
That's a tough one, because Nigerian parenting takes no prisoners. Takes no prisoners at all. You know, it's, huh? You know, huh? Did you kill Mugbo? What did I hear? You failed. You failed.
You're failing.
Yeah, like, you know, the next plane back to Lagos or Abuja tomorrow. You failed. Who are you like? And so on. And this can really put a lot of pressure on the young person. So I would say the first thing, let's try to listen. What is it that's going on in this person's life? Just listen, hear them out. It could be, you know, there could be a daughter who found herself pregnant and is struggling with being pregnant in college or uni. Who do they tell? So the parents should try to listen as much as they can. And if one parent is flying off the handle, maybe the other parents can give the eye or the look. I mean, that look that we know well, just look, go easy. Let's hear this child. Trust in inquiry. Just try and find out, so what's going on? Okay, you're not going to die. You might be in trouble, but we're not going to kill you. What's going on? Confiding conversation where possible. And whatever you do, if someone's going through so much pressure and distress, don't add pressure to it. Now, one reality is many parents project their own anxiety. So the same dad or mom who was a party freak in university, who got failed, and who had a wild time and didn't do that well, when their child is showing a fraction of that, you know, all that mythical story. You know, when I was in university, I nearly got a first class. I missed by one grade. Meanwhile, they got a third class.
Until they find the result from the attic, right?
So don't project your own stress and anxiety on the young person, because what that does is, rather than, you know, reduce the tension, the situation, it heightens it. Sustaining love and care. And that's not easy, because if you're really angry, what do you do? But try to just be there with the person. And if the person's many, many miles away or in another country, try to identify someone local, you know, some local support. And that can go a long way, because just it may be just a weekend with Uncle Uche, who just gives a home environment, some kind words of encouragement. And if there may be people that the person looks up to or they can mentor. So for parents, it's tough. It's an emotional test. People look at the, you know, return on investment. If you're spending, you know, 20-something thousand pounds on someone's education as an international student, you want something back, but you don't want a child in a body bag either.
Thank you very much. To summarize what you've said, this stress affects both the child as much as it affects the parents. Mm-hmm. And having that balance and understanding that this may be transient, and being able to listen to one another in this difficult period can go a long way, and understanding the stress that is associated with this sort of situation. You're still listening to Doctor's Round. Now we're going to take a quick break here to listen to some music about teacher not teaching me nonsense.
Thank you.
right, Dr. AG, you just got your music there. Teacher, don't teach me nonsense. Okay, all right. Before I hand over to you, there's something pertinent that Nigerians are asking me or asking us to ask Dr. Ayoride. All right, you know, Nigerian students in captivity by the bandits were just released. And they're saying, what kind of mental state would they be in? And what kind of support should they be getting at a time like this? Maybe somewhere down the line, you'll find time to address this. Over to you, AG.
That's very contemporary, and I'm sure we can address it. But certainly, I can imagine the amount of, in the immediate term, the degree of anxiety, acute anxiety symptom that they're going through, depressive symptom. And as these kids readjust to life, what residual effect like post-traumatic stress disorder and deterioration in the academic performance. But we can certainly look at that. Can you tell, Dr. Onide, is this scenario that you describe about stress leading to this acute mental reaction, is this unique to Nigerian students alone or is this global?
Oh, no, this is certainly a global phenomenon. We see it in students from India, China. We see it in across the board of students. A very interesting point, because it shouldn't be lost on the song that we just heard, which was Fela Anikulapo Kuti. Now, it's interesting that Fela himself was an international student.
You bet.
And of course, there were high expectations of him to become a physician. And spare a thought for a family where a child was expected to become a physician and comes back a musician. And a reminder to all of us as parents and who support people going through education, a child's choices doesn't mean the person going to be a wreck. You know, hey, fella lives on. So don't give up. The child that's not become your dream architect or engineer still
has hope. Daudu will be rolling in his grave with fella. Because when Fela left and they thought, oh, you're going to read medicine, and of course, Fumilayo was encouraging him to go and read medicine until he went to music. I'm sure the first time Daudu had that, you know what, this guy is reading music. I could imagine what was going on in his mind and how he was panting. You're absolutely correct. Yes. So other nationals also feel this, they have this kind of problem, right?
Oh, it's competitive, and there are some cultural differences. I'm not trying to stereotype any specific culture, but then I mean, we see international students from different regions of the world. It's tough, and for some of them, you're adjusting to two cultures. You know, you're learning to code switch. So when you're amongst your peers, you're speaking and then you get your phone call from, you know, Nigeria. Hi, Dad. Huh? When did that start? Sorry. Hello, sir. I'm okay, sir. And really, straddling two cultures isn't easy, particularly when you're young. And the expectations, you're expected to be a quintessentially traditional Nigerian person, yet you've got the expectations not to look like you're just fresh off the boat when you're in diaspora. Not easy, particularly when you're young.
Does this happen among Nigerian students back home too?
Oh, yes,
this
goodness.
This sort of stress, does it?
Where there are students, there will be issues to do with pressure and mental distress. It happened when I was a student in Nigeria. And the pressure to study, to succeed in a multi-million population country, the competition to get a job where you've got 60, 80, 100 people competing for one job, where opportunity, I mean, it's embedded in our culture. And apologies once again, I wish I spoke more Wazobia. But, you know, even in Yoruba culture, you know, they say, you know, tobacco where, but I don't cook. You know, the expectation that if you're well studied, we'll hear the sound of your shoes. But then if you're poorly educated, we'll hear the drag of your slippers or your flip-flops. So it's it's the way we are, and the evidence is global. Nigerians push education to the limits. You know, 1 degree, so you're still going to read your master's. Master, what's a PhD? Okay, but you're still going to be called doctor, aren't you? And it's not easy. Spare a child in a family who has learning impairments, who has mental disorders, who's trying his best or talented, or who may have autism, Asperger's, or very complex anxiety problems. The child is doing their best within their ability, and sometimes just the sheer family pressure. And a warning to parents, you know, a child's academic success isn't your trophy. My son is doing well, he's in Harvard. mine's in Yale. Okay, well, mine got into Oxford. Mine's in Cambridge. You know, it's your child isn't your trophy. You're given an education to set them for with a platform for their own futures.
Thank you very much. That's a perfect segue to this question here. Medical and psychology textbook. Say there is a unique mental disorder called brain fog syndrome among Nigerian students. Is that the case? And what is brain fog syndrome?
Doctor, that one our hello.
Well, okay, may I hear you, man?
Okay, so what happens is we've got the diagnostic Bibles in psychiatry called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association and so on. And what these manuals have is they've got a diagnosis called brain fog syndrome, which is a mental disorder associated with study in Nigerian students. That's what's alleged. It's taught in the curriculum all over the world. People doing postgraduate exams learn about it. And it's said to be unique to Nigerian students. And now it's been built to West African and African students, whereby when they study, their head starts getting hot. Then their body will just be tingling, and so on. And it's meant to be, it's so taught that if you look at the history of how this came about, there's a colonial root to it. Background really is that there was a Canadian psychiatrist who turned up in Nigeria, who then said he was, you know, Nigerian students would complain of brain fog. And he said it was a language used uniquely in Nigeria by Nigerian students to describe this collection of symptoms. Now, what we know in clinical practice is anxiety sensations, bodily sensations, inability to sleep occurs across student populations all over the world. My deep concern about it is the concept of brain fog syndrome has been weaponized. It's been weaponized to make assumptions about intellect and intellectual ability in Nigerian students. I've seen correspondence where universities wonder whether a student has the capacity and capability to complete a degree or qualify because of the risk of brain fog. People are turned up with depression and anxiety, and they're being told they've got a unique African mental disorder called brain fog. And let's just step back. What's it about African brains that when they study, they develop a mental disorder and others don't? Hey, come off it.
Doctor, just sorry to interrupt, but what about culture bound? Why wouldn't you say it's a culture bound sort of disorder? There's an entity in psychiatry, you guys talk about it, culture bound syndrome. Why is it not one of them?
Well, there are all sorts. I mean, the concepts of culture bound syndromes is beginning to shift, and they talk of culture specific disorders. An example, there's a talk that Koro, which is the concept of stolen penis. Yes, you heard me say the word penis on radio. The concept of stolen penises, K-O-R-O, was felt to be common in Nigeria and unique to, but no, it happens around the world. This is not a unique cultural phenomenon. A culture-bound syndrome would suggest that it occurs specifically in that culture. It's not found in other places. And actually, if I did historical research, and I can make the details available through the website of the radio station, the term brain fog syndrome or brain fog was not initially used in Nigeria in 1960. That is wrong. That is miseducation, it's misleading, it's racially loaded, and it's wrong. The term brain fag was used for the very first time in England in 1850. 1850 and not 1960 Nigeria. So there's a lot of curriculum content that needs reviewing, and we can debate the brain fag point, but it's certainly not unique. I've seen the same symptoms in my Chinese students and students from Asian subcontinent and so on.
So essentially, this is more a common phenomenon that occurs in a diverse environment to different intensity from mild to severe form.
Yep.
And it could be anxiety, it could be depression, it could be acute stress reaction, and your common day, I mean, the common call of psychiatry could be, that's what we're dealing with.
Yep, and somatic or bodily sensations. And really, again, kudos again to Fela. This is a classic case of teacher, don't teach me nonsense. It's nonsense. Which kind of word?
I like that.
Now,
I like that.
The Chris, when I read book. And if it's not Chris, it was, oh, my brother, may you not stop me here.
Okay. We'll leave that for another day. Yeah,
thank you.
So you've explained to us that this has a sort of a colonial legacy, as you've eloquently put it. This movement, you said there's a movement that is, it's working very hard to decolonize this curricula. Can you tell us what that is all about?
Yeah, well, if we think of it, a lot of the curricula we have, whether it's in medicine, history, geography, and so on, was based on, well, colonial, in Nigeria, colonial British curricula. And with a lot of respect to that philosopher called Fela, you know, how can you read in a history book that someone discovered River Niger? People had a name for the river. They were fishing in it. They were swimming in it. They were getting their water from it. The river was there. It wasn't missing. How could anyone discover it when it was there? And there's so many bits about curricula that are now old and archaic and need to be reviewed. Same thing applies to medical curricula. Now, some are less dangerous, but some are actually quite dangerous. So if we look at medical curricula and decolonizing the contents like brain fag, is colonial. But we also have colonial misinformation. March tomorrow is the beginning of Colon Cancer Awareness Month. Now, some of the traditional old texts have it that, you know, bowel cancer and colon cancer is rare or uncommon amongst Africans. Wrong. It's actually the opposite. We have higher rates than some other groups. And so there's so many aspects of the curriculum or misleading information about sickle cell disease. And we, you know, there are suggestions in some quarters that, you know, Africans tolerate pain much better. So people with sickle cell in a crisis, in agony, not receiving the right amount of pain medication. So there's a lot of curricular content that certainly needs review. And I guess we have to do it.
So we, as we. In larger we, what can we do to decolonize this curriculum? What sort of, do you have examples of what, in addition to what you're doing, what can we do?
Well, I think the first bit is to be inquisitive. So if you're given a fact, and now with all the COVID and so on, we've become quite good at facts checking. If someone tells you, this is a fact. Be inquisitive. Is this really what it is? Is it true that Africans don't really have bowel cancer? How can that be? And the more you look into it, the more you may discover. I think coming back to our students, the younger generation are probably better equipped. The older generation was rote learning. You cram it, you regurgitate it, good. You got your marks. For the younger generation, they're going through education, learning critical thinking. And we should be critical thinkers. And through critical thinking. You're questioning facts, knowledge. Is this really the case? Could it be anything different? And that process of critical teaching, which is now being taught more, does help. Linking to our campus talk earlier, if you've gone to school in Niger and you've been taught to cram things and learn that list, and you find yourself in Europe or North America, and you have to be a critical thinker, that can be stressful because you're not used to challenging what the teacher said, and they want you to challenge it because you've grown up at home, and you said, but dad, could it be that I'm your father? Are you wiser than me? When were you born? You think I was... But in other educational systems, you're actually being encouraged to challenge and explore and be critical thinkers. So we should be critical thinkers.
And you're absolutely correct, because that even affects, even in practice, when you talk to your patients. Most Nigerian patients, I mean, I practiced in Nigeria before practicing in Europe, before coming to practice here in Canada. Most patients don't ask you questions. And is there a right to know? And everybody's afraid because the doctor knows it all. I think this is part of our intention here on Doctor's Round, to bring information to the public. An educated public is an inquisitive public, is a public that asks questions and fight for their right. And if we really want to pull down this colonial veil over the same organ that everybody has all over the world, we need to do this. On that note, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to do that all Kolo mentality, as Papa himself said it. Kolo mentality will be the song that you see out house, and then we'll come back to continue this discussion on Dr. Strand with Dr. Anyonrede.
Kolo mentality. I say you fit in, never release yourself. Kolo mentality.
If you say you be colonial man, you don't be slave man before. They don't release you now, but you never release yourself.
If it so, them they do, them they overdo all the things that them they do.
If
it so, them they do, them they do, them they overdo all the things that them they do.
If
it so, them they do, them they think it's that they better pass them, brother. And if it so,
if
it so, them they do, them they think it's that they better pass them, brother. And if it
so,
the thing with black no good, the foreign things them they like. And if it
so,
the thing with black no good. Now foreign things, them they like it not be so.
Be so.
Them go down your yeah, condition and close them country away not be so.
Be so.
Them go down your yeah, condition and close them country away not be so.
Be so.
Them judge him go cocky weak and jail him brother away not be so.
Be so.
Them judge him go put him weak and jail him brother away not be so.
Be so.
Them go proud of them name and put them slave name for heading up the soul.
Be so.
Them go proud of them name and put them slave name for heading up the soul.
Be so.
Kolo mentality now make you hear me now. It's a ransom he make you hear. It's a Williams he make you hear. It's a Aliyah make you hear. It's a Mohammed he make you hear. It's a Anglican he make you hear.
All right, Dr. AG, this is Nigeria Kolo mentality.
Thank you very much. That's Baba himself on Kolo mentality. You're still on the doctor's round, and our guest is Dr. Anyonrede, an associate professor of psychiatry and psychology from Queen's University here in Kingston, Canada, and he's also the chair of the Commission on Black Medical Students at Queen's University. And this is the segment that you can send in your questions. Feel free to call us. And the number to call is 234-705-230-1010. You can call 0705-230-1010 with your questions. While we're waiting for your questions, I would like to ask Dr. Anyonride to tell us more about this commission on black student.
All right, just before we go, let me make a correction on that number. It's 0705-320, not 230, 320-1010.
320-1010.
Yes.
That's my dyslexia at play. Come on. All right, then, Dr. Anyonride, can you tell us more about this commission on black students?
Yes, and I'll try and keep it brief. Now, the Commission on Black Medical Students is an attempt to reverse history in my university. In 1918, Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, Canada, kicked out Black medical students. They were all asked to leave. And this was on the basis of a historical event in the US. There was something known as the Carnegie Foundation, which did a review of medical education in North America. And it was felt that Black physicians probably carried the diseases and disorders of the Black community they were in, and they were better off looking after Black patients and not white patients, but also felt there were too many Black medical schools. So they left Howard and another medical school, and funding was then linked to not having Black students. So my university, being ambitious, kicked its students out. Now, in 2019, someone discovered this, and it was all through signed off by Senate. Someone discovered this, an amazing astrophysics researcher, and a formal apology was given in 2019 to try and reverse this. So the university...
2 years ago.
2 years ago, a formal apology was finally given to undo the deep damage done. So what we're trying to do now is to develop opportunities for Black students with the potential, with a desire to study medicine, to have better opportunities, to actually have a place in medical school and become doctors as they wish to become, of course, through competition and the rest, but it's an opportunity to reverse that. And my role as the chair of the commission is to oversee these opportunities. And what we've done, which is really rewarding, is mobilize physicians from all over the world, Black physicians, to support. So we've got Bennett Omalu, who's featured in the film Concussion. He is a great supporter and is willing to support in some innovative ways. We've got a young doctor in the US, Dr. Faramir Okonlami. He's been immense, and a few others. So we're developing a faculty of physicians, Black physicians, to support our students here across a whole range of areas of expertise. What we're doing also is developing leadership, where Black people or people of African heritage are able to also support these people, because it's one thing to become a physician, but it's another thing to be comfortable in your role as a physician. And that's what the commission's about. So we've got a leadership being developed. It's exciting. Hopefully we'll turn history around. I'll be back in Abeokuta quick.
Well, and that is very important if you look at it. I mean, today marks the end of the Black History Month. We've been celebrating this since the February 1st, and we've talked about great things that Blacks have brought into this community and other communities in the world. And having the younger generation be aware that there are individuals who are really dedicated to ensuring that Blacks take the position that they ought to take in the community and that will make contribution, that's very helpful. How can anyone then support your commission if there was anything that could be done?
Yes, I'll make this super short because there may be people who want to ask questions. But for the commission support, people can reach out to the radio station or to you if they're in a capacity to support with leadership opportunities. You know, Niger probably produces MBAs and execs galore. Coaching, mentorship, financial support, not that I'm making a request for that here, but there will be opportunities, and people reach out to the station or to yourself, we can have dialogues about that.
Certainly, they can also reach out to the Canadian Association of Physicians and Dentists. I mean, there's a pool of doctors from Nigeria, from all parts of Nigeria, and they will be willing to provide the support. The Black Black Physician Association also play a major role in this.
Yeah.
You're listening to Doctors Round on SNR, and this is question time. You can call in your questions while we're waiting to have questions. I have a question here from a member of the pub. A listener said that, what do you say to parents who wanted their children to read law but couldn't, and they forcefully send them and become upset when the student could not make the point?
Yeah, whether it's law or anything else, one thing a parent shouldn't do is try and force a child to study a particular course. I'll give an example. There was a student I was working with, final year of medicine. He had one exam to do. And he told me he didn't want to become a doctor. He was upset with his parents, and he deliberately failed the final exam. He said he knew mom and dad were preparing, but he wanted to hurt them. And he failed. So you can't really force people to study. Even if you push, it's going to be tough. So I recall there's the question also about the released students, but maybe that's what you wanted to ask now. I read minds.
Thank you. So can you go ahead and address that question quickly about the released student and what are the possible psychiatric complications or mental health issues they may have?
Yeah. It's a terrible situation. Terrible, terrible, terrible. To be abducted, potentially physically hurt or sexually hurt, it's a very traumatizing situation. Anxiety provoking, scary. And for a number of these people, they'll be left with traumatic memories that last perhaps even a lifetime. Where traumatic memories that can be part of a diagnosis like what was called post-traumatic stress disorder, where they're reliving over and over and over the day they were being kidnapped. Some may have been raped or sexually abused. And that's a terrible place to be as a young person. Some may even end up being pregnant and having a pregnancy, you know, gender-based or a form of violence for something you didn't consent to. So these are people who are left with severe trauma, depression, anxiety. Some may no longer even want to be part of education. Some may feel filthy. I wouldn't be surprised if some commit suicide. It's a terrible place to put a young person. And let's drop a big statistic here. 75% of mental disorders have their roots before the age of 25. Three quarters of mental disorders are born, or they have their existence starting before the age of 25. So these are young people with critically developing brains. It's a molding critical stage of life, and we owe it. We owe it in diaspora. We owe it to those in Nigeria. This must stop. You know, these are our mothers and fathers and people of the future, and it's a blemish on our great nation. Sorry to sound political, but these young people deserve adult voices. They really do.
I can imagine what their parents are going, their friends are going through as well, because those are the people with secondary traumatic experience, and that also has its effect. What can we do as a society to support these individuals? Do you have any advice?
I'll stay clinical. My head won't go political, but my mouth will stay clinical.
No, you're a physician. This is Doctor's Round.
Okay. And I would say we should offer the best psychological support, trauma support we can for these people and their parents. Many of them are still going to look to mom, dad, auntie, uncle to give them emotional support and so on. Yeah. The parents need support. The young people need support. What can we do? We can support financially, we can support with trauma services, but it's a particular specialist type of trauma, but this needs to be culturally informed as well. So you can't just parachute someone in from Canada or someone in from, you know, the UK and because they're a trauma specialist. You can be a trauma specialist, but when it comes to, you know, Yayaiki and Nagode and all that, if you don't, I mean, for instance, if you don't speak the language, you don't pick up the nuances, if you're sending male trauma specialists to attend to young people who may be Muslim, for instance, you may be getting it wrong. But we need the advocacy, they need support. And I would say for every single one of them, let's help them bounce back. It may be that one family supports one child. One family supports one child and their family. But we certainly can't let them. We're producing trauma. In factory loads, we're producing more trauma than physicians can handle. And we can't let this continue. Oops, that's nearly getting political again. Oh, dear.
No, you got to stick to medicine. And you see, our colleagues at home, I can imagine what they're going through as well, because they're doing great jobs. They're sending these individuals, and we need to help them to do the job the best they can in this trying time. There's no doubt about it that the trauma, whether this the kids or the other individuals who have gone through kidnapping experiences, we're really creating a ground where for the development of manifestation of chronic traumatic disorder as time goes on. So this is where we need to pay particular attention. Unfortunately, it's always an interesting thing to have you on this radio program, and I wish we could continue. But unfortunately, the time is out again. Dr. Strand has gone, time in, time out. So I'd like to thank you again on behalf of all the listeners. I would like to thank Spirit of Nigerian Radio Town for a great job they're doing. Technical difficulties, hey, it will come, but we get better as time goes on. I'd like to say big thanks out there for our technical crew. This is the end of today's Dr. Zran. I'll be back again next week with another interesting topic. Thanks.
Salu, nagode, eshepupo.
Ya jama, bye bye, kachiponu. Mukwana life here, bye bye.
Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.